so many women feel off, even when they're doing everything they think they're supposed to do.
Women, on average, perceive stress like 40% higher than men. They're always trying to figure out, like, well, why do I feel this way? Like, why do I feel tired? Like, why am I gaining weight?
This week, I'm sitting down with Dr. Austin Lake, a functional medicine practitioner who's helping women finally understand why they can't lose weight or operate with energy and clarity, and how stress, metabolism, toxins, and even our daily rhythms are quietly shaping how we look and feel.
A lot of women start their day with caffeine, they start their day with their phone, and they start their day with immediately getting in the doom scrolling cycle.
We'll break down what's really causing fatigue and burnout in women today.
They're applying 150 chemicals to their body every day, and those chemicals that go through your skin go right to your hormones.
And how rebuilding your body's foundation, not chasing quick fixes, can restore lasting energy and peace. Let's dig in. Dr. Lake, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course. So normally we are grounded and grounded while we record these episodes, and you're not barefoot, but you're still grounding. Tell us about these shoes that you're wearing.
Yeah, I just found, and this is not an infomercial, I promise. I'm not even affiliated.
No.
Maybe I will be, but yeah, these are grounding shoes. I'm not sure if you guys can see it. It has a copper rod that kind of goes through your sole and then kind of connects to your foot. And it's not uncomfortable. So my wife got me these, and I've been rocking them. So I figured I could try them out here on the Grounded Wilderness podcast.
Love that. Yeah. Do you feel a difference?
Oh, I
Does
feel
it
so
feel
calm.
Like you're barefoot?
Hard to, actually, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't feel anxious, so maybe I do. I feel less inflamed.
Maybe
I don't know.
There's something.
I don't know. I feel very, very good. None of my kids wear shoes. Like, they're always barefoot, and they're always cutting their feet and stuff, but I should get them a pair of these and help them out, because they just naturally
Do they have kid sizes?
Probably.
Yeah.
It's Earthing Harmony is the name of the company, and I'm not sure. I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
They probably, my wife loves them, so.
Love it.
Yeah.
Okay, you have a video on your Instagram, and it's a conversation between you and Tamara Mowry,
mm-hmm.
or is it Tia?
Tamara.
Okay,
yeah.
I thought so.
Yeah.
And it sounds like she's a client of yours, and mm-hmm. in this video, she's just going on and on about how the weight has just fallen off and she feels amazing since working with you. Without getting too much into like her individual protocol,
sure.
What are some of the basic things that you did to help her and that seem to just help every woman across the board with their health?
Yeah, I think the first thing that I always try to do is just understand like what their life looks like, you know, like what challenges they face on an ongoing basis, because it doesn't make sense for me or anybody else to create a plan for something that they can't follow. And so I always want to know, you know, what is the day-to-day struggle in terms of when you wake up to when you go to bed? Like, are you eating meals throughout the day? Are you skipping meals? Are you getting sunlight? Are you drinking water? Are you breathing clean air? Are you having consistent bedtime? And so that's where I always start with all my clients. I started the same thing with her and just kind of figured out like, wow, like there's some missing gaps in terms of, you know, just how you start your day. A lot of women start their day with caffeine. They start their day with their phone, and they start their day with, you know, just immediately getting in the doom scrolling cycle, right? And then that kind of leads into the rest of their day in terms of their cortisol, because your cortisol is going to be highest when you wake up, right? Like that's usually what wakes you up for a normal circadian rhythm process. But if you're waking up and then you're spiking your cortisol and maybe going to the gym, and none of this is promoting like a calming sensation for your day, it's all promoting more stress response, it's going to be very hard for a female who relies on progesterone balanced with estrogen to feel well and feel calm. And so cortisol, if you are in a state of high cortisol chronically, you're going to have a lower progesterone state overall. Like, you start reducing progesterone output. And so for a lot of my clients, we're just trying to figure out like, okay, if you have a hormonal imbalance, like you have PMS or you have disrupted cycles, or if you're going through perimenopause and it's going really rough, or you're transitioning into menopause, they're always trying to figure out like, well, why do I feel this way? Like, why do I feel tired? Like, why am I gaining weight? Why do I need more thyroid medication, or why do I need thyroid medication at all? And all of it gets back to this understanding that your circadian rhythm dictates a lot of your hormonal release throughout the day. And so insulin is directly tied to cortisol. So if cortisol goes up, insulin sensitivity, which is a good thing, goes down. And so you're gonna be more likely to store fat around your waist or on your body and those areas that you don't like, because it's a survival hormone. Like, it's a survival mechanism to store fat. And so I always figure that out with my clients first. And then from there, we go through a bit of a detox protocol, and we kind of walk them through that over the course of 4 to 5 months and figure out what deficiencies they have and kind of go from there.
Yeah. I love that you mentioned circadian rhythm stuff first. I feel like that's something that so many people miss.
Yeah.
Or like, they think it's not that important. And it really is. It's so important. Like, yeah. If people only knew the difference that getting outside in the morning and getting natural sunlight and then, you know, making sure that you're not getting exposed to so much blue light at night. Like, all of that stuff matters so much. Like, I almost see it as another type of nutrient. Like, there's food and that's a type of nutrient, but, like, sunlight is another type of nutrient. And too much of it at the wrong, not too much sunlight, but too much, like, artificial light at the wrong times or not enough sunlight at the right times can do so much damage.
Yeah, and I think, you know, historically speaking, that's all we ever had, right? Like, we had maybe incandescent light bulbs, and then we had the sun, you know, but we didn't have all these LED lights and, you know, blue lights and all these different things like that. And so I think it's a free thing, too. It's like, it's one of these things that people always in the biohacking community get so focused on these expensive interventions, and it's like, sunlight is free.
Focus
and
on the basics.
Like,
first.
Drinking clean water, like, can be a little challenging depending on where you live, but it's not impossible. You can get a good RO system, a countertop unit for $300 to $150. You can add some minerals to it, and that's a great start to your day. But a lot of the women that I talk to, it's a lack of knowledge about those things. Like, they know that, like, sunlight's good. Like, they know that drinking less caffeine's good. But a lot of them think, like, I should be fasting, and so I should skip breakfast, and then I'll have a salad for lunch, and then I'll get starving at, like, 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and then I'll binge eat when the sun is starting to kind of go down. My insulin's becoming less sensitive, and so I'm going to be storing more of these calories that I'm consuming as fat, and you feel less energetic throughout the day, you feel more bloated, you're eating in a higher stress situation because it's probably, like, middle of the day, and you're not, like, waking up in a nice, calm environment. And so you could, if I always tell my clients, like, you want to eat most of your calories before 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Like, just eat 80% of your food with the sun. So breakfast, don't skip it, have a full lunch, and then maybe have a snack and then have a light dinner. And, like, that's your day, right? It's not overly complicated, but that order of operations gets kind of confused and twisted.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. It's like tuning your whole life around the patterns of the sun. It's not just like, okay, get your 10 minutes of sun in the morning and you're done. Right. It's like, how do we integrate the things that we do in a 24-hour cycle with, like, the rhythm of the sun?
Yeah.
And that flows into, like, so many facets.
Yeah, then that sets your sleep cycle. Like, you'll sleep better at night. You'll wake up more energized. Like, it literally affects everything. Like, if you could just get in tune with the sun, with God's creation, like, it'll change your health if you just start to focus on that simple fact.
You work exclusively with women in your practice. What are some of the biggest problems and concerns that women come to you with?
Oh, I mean, it's the common stuff of, you know, a lot of women may not have a diagnosis. It's just, like, they have symptoms, right? They're, you know, they've been told that they have, you know, maybe PCOS. They've been told that they have a thyroid problem, or they have told they have Hashimoto's, or, you know, whatever. And I think more times than not, that stuff is not as important to them as it is, like, hey, I don't feel well when I wake up, or I have no energy to take care of my kids or my grandkids. Or I've been working out really hard and I can't lose an ounce of weight and I'm actually gaining weight now and it's not muscle. I'm getting flabbier or whatever they say. And so I think there's those kind of complaints. And then there's the big ones like, hey, I can't get pregnant. Like, we're, you know, like, my husband and I have been trying and we're looking at IVF and we're just like, we want to have children so badly, but we just can't seem to get pregnant. Like, those are the bigger ones for me where I really get passionate about that because just losing weight isn't, I mean, it's a good thing. It's a good sign of improving your health, but it's not the main focus, right? Like, that's not enough to motivate you to do what it takes to kind of get your life back on track. And I always tell clients, it's like, if you're moving, imagine like if you're moving down a train track and you lose the brakes and the thing's still going full steam ahead. To stop that train takes a lot of effort. Like, you gotta figure out what you're doing wrong. You gotta take some of the right supplements. You gotta get your circadian rhythm dialed in. You gotta do all these things right to get that thing to stop. And once it stops, you got to move it the other direction. And that's where it takes some time to get that momentum shifted. But a lot of women may be doing the right things, but they're not sure that it's working because they're not seeing the results yet. They're doing like bits and pieces of it. And I always tell them, it's like if you break your wrist and you wear a cast, it's if you take the cast off on the weekends to go play basketball and then you like put it back on and you go to see the doctor and like, well, it's actually not healing. You're like, well, what's going on? I'm wearing my cast like 90% of the time. It's like, well, you're not following the protocol the way you should be. And so a lot of women are not following the right protocol for their healing. They're focused on doing healthy things, but it's not like a healing protocol. It's just like I eat kind of healthy. I exercise sometimes. Like I fast sometimes. I get pretty good sleep from like midnight to 7. And like, they're just missing like these bits and pieces. So we always want to kind of dial in like, what is it for them specifically? And how can they be consistent enough to start seeing true healing?
In general, why do you think women today are so burnt out and stressed?
I mean, I think I just blame it on feminism, you know, really. I think there was the first wave of feminism was good. Obviously, women having equal rights to vote and to make decisions like that, that's obviously a good thing. So if you're listening to this, I'm not against women's rights. Like, that's not the point. But when you start to prioritize getting women out in the workforce and kind of condemning staying at home with your children and then get women on birth control to do that and encourage that, I think that's where we've kind of shifted a hormonal problem and then also adding just a ton of stress to the issue. Hi. So I think there's a kind of combination of effects, again, getting back to their stress, to where if a woman is having to do all these responsibilities that she normally didn't have to, or do taking care of the children and taking care of the household and taking care of the finances, that's just a lot for anybody. I don't care if you're a man or female, but especially women are not necessarily made to carry that load hormonally. And I think you start seeing the shift from progesterone and healthy estrogens to testosterone and androgens, probably by design, because it helps them to actually survive that situation and become more like a man.
So those hormones you see increasing when women are living in these like stressed out states where they're having to kind of like do what traditionally like men have done more so.
Right.
And then also fulfill that role in the home.
Yeah. In PCOS, that's kind of like a prime driver of PCOS. There's a metabolic issue. Obviously there's a genetic component, but really what that does is it, you know, affects 1 in 8 women, I think now. And, you know, you start getting like facial hair, you start losing your cycle, you have issues with fertility, you start getting more testosterone output. And, to me, it's like it's an adaptation, you know, and it's not a good one, but it's a survival adaptation. So it's actually kind of makes sense, but I think that's why we're seeing it happen to so many women.
Yeah. I feel this conversation so deeply right now. This dog is visiting us. Yeah. Maybe we should drink our liver smoothies before.
Yeah, before he does.
Before he does.
Well, cheers.
Cheers. Yeah. Have you had raw liver before?
Yeah, I've had it just like in capsules, but not like chewed it or anything like that. And this is, you never know.
Yeah, this is like just pure raw liver, blended up with some berries and honey and raw milk.
Berries and honey will cover a lot of taste, so.
Yep.
That's really good.
I feel a chunk in here, and I'm scared. I'm just scared about whether or not it's a berry or a chunk of liver.
Chunk of liver.
Oh my goodness.
Either way, it's really good.
Good.
It's awesome.
I'm glad you like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think about this a lot because I obviously like have a brand, have a company.
Yeah.
I also have 3 kids, and it's not easy. And people ask sometimes, like, how do you do it all? And it's like, well, I don't. I mean, I drop balls all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I wish I didn't, but that's the reality. And more so at work than at home, because I'd rather let work stuff fall through the cracks than stuff with my family.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, I think I feel such purpose in it that, like, my husband and I made the decision that we see this as a calling and something that I'm being called to do. And I feel like God has allowed that to happen by giving us like the right help
when
we need it, you know, around in the household, and then giving me an amazing like team to work with at Primary Pure.
That's key.
But I mean, I still feel at times. I was talking to you this morning before we started recording about the morning I had with balancing all that stuff. And so it's not an easy thing. And I definitely don't think that every woman needs to be in the workforce. It's not for everybody.
And I think you have to kind of choose, right? Like, so for me and my wife, for example, like she works extremely hard, like managing our household, and I work hard doing the business stuff. Like, and there's crossover at both that, right? Like I need to help out in the house and help with our kids, and she has to help out business stuff sometime. But like, as far as our primary responsibilities, like we have roles that we fulfill. And I think for a lot of women that maybe don't have a support person in their life or family around them or a husband or whatever, like if you're a single mom, where single moms are having a lot of these health problems, it's like, well, no kidding.
Yeah.
Like they have nobody. And I think that's really all I'm trying to get people to think about, is just that there is a cost to the stuff. Like if you're not sleeping, if you're not eating healthy, if you're not taking the right supplements, if you're having mold exposure in your house or whatever, like there's just a consequence to your health. And so I think it doesn't mean that you can't work. Like, that's not what I'm trying to say. It just means you have to understand that you can't do it all. And like, nobody's immune to this stuff. Like, we just have to understand that we need Sabbath and rest, and we need help and support. That's really the biggest thing.
Well, and I think there's so much value in taking care of your body and like making like deposits in your health bank, per se, like by maintaining a healthy diet. Like for me, that's one thing. Like there's some certain things that I won't budge on, like how I eat, getting outside first thing in the morning, getting a walk almost every single day just to clear my head, move my body. Like I think being consistent with that stuff will, you know, when the stressful things do happen, they wear on you less when right. you are dialed in the things that you can control.
Yeah, I always tell my wife and I, we were traveling a few years ago with the kids, and we were both pretty stressed out, and we just decided to stop drinking coffee. You know, like, we love coffee, but, like, not when it's adding more stress to your physiology, yeah. to your cells. It's like, that's something that we can control, and we can't always control all the circumstances around us, but you can control, for the most part, what you eat, what you drink, and how you sleep, you know, and so...
Did you switch to, like, matcha or anything, or just straight no caffeine?
No, I think we just did no caffeine.
Oh, yeah. Man.
I know.
I'm in that boat right now. Like, I just switched from coffee to matcha, and that nice. Was a big step for me. Mm,
that is big.
So, yeah. I mean, I did have coffee this morning, though, because yeah. I felt like I needed it, but I'm trying. I'm trying to, like, shift in that
we
direction.
Do, like, we do a third calf option through Purity Coffee, and...
What does that mean? Oh, like, one-third caffeine.
It's a third caffeine, so instead of being decaf, it's, like, a little bit of caffeine. And it's probably, it's, like, less than 50 milligrams of caffeine. So a typical cup of coffee is, like, 140. So it's a pretty substantial reduction. And that helps out quite a bit, yeah. you know, because I...
You still get the ritual of it.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people complain about, giving up is the ritual. I'm like, well, you can have something else warm.
Yeah.
For me, I did a caffeine detox, or just fast, I guess you would say. But I did it for like 5-6 days just because I felt like it had more control over me than I had over it.
Yeah.
And I didn't like that. And so I wanted to do that completely just for myself to prove that I could. But I don't feel bad drinking caffeine typically unless I have just... substantial amounts. Like whenever we go traveling like we are now, I drink like full strength caffeine, and I feel it a lot faster than I do when I'm at home drinking my third calf. So I think anything less than 50 milligrams, especially for women that are having progesterone issues, is a good idea. And do it after you have breakfast. And if you do that, like, it really can yeah. help your hormones a little bit more.
Yeah. I've heard like you should wait 90 minutes mm-hmm. from when you wake up, and then also breakfast, obviously.
Right. Yeah.
But because of what you mentioned earlier, the cortisol, mm-hmm. when you first wake up, it's already at its peak. You don't need right. to add more.
Right.
But if you wait like 90 minutes and then have breakfast, it'll kind of like have a better effect on your body.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Is there a difference in types of stress? Because sometimes I feel heightened, I guess. I feel like in somewhat of a heightened, stressful state, but it's like, it feels positive. Like mm-hmm. I'm excited about things, and I'm like just... on and yeah. going. And I don't know, is there a difference in like purposeful stress where you're like enjoying it almost versus like stress of just feeling bogged down and behind and you're just overwhelmed and like spinning?
Yeah, I think for sure. I mean, there's eustress, which is like a positive form of stress. You know, I think
you call it
eustress.
What's that
like,
mean?
It's like EU. It's just like a positive, positively reinforced stress response within the system. And so there's like adaptation, there's like hormesis, like there's like a challenge that you're meeting, and if you can handle it, like I think I saw recently Dr. Pompa was talking about this actually, and that like hormetic stress is like a good thing, right? If you can handle the adaptation requirements. A lot of women that are in these stressful states, and women on average perceive stress like 40% higher than men. Mm. And my theory is, it makes a lot of sense to me at least, but it's like if you're just walking by yourself in a big city and you're just like not sure of your surroundings and like somebody's going to try to take something from you, like as a female, like that would be more stressful than it would be as a man, like just because like you'd be a little bit more vulnerable. So I think there's like a natural state of like women are a little bit more protective, and that's a good thing. Like if you have children, like you're gonna be more protective of your children, you're gonna be more protective of your own physiology. So there's a natural higher perceived level of stress from female to men, but overall a lot of women are engaging in stressful activities that are not beneficial. Like they're like I said, they're fasting, they're adding too much caffeine, they're exercising too intensely, especially around their different phases of their cycle. And so now all of a sudden it becomes a negative stress, and it's not helpful in terms of that adaptation, that hormesis perspective.
What are the biggest reasons that women feel stuck when it comes to losing weight?
I mean, it kind of builds on what I was saying before. I think there's a lot of these, there's some hidden issues that they're not aware of, you know, like I mentioned mold briefly. Mold's a huge problem that, you know, I just tested my 6-year-old daughter and she has mold. I didn't even know it because we lived in Costa Rica for a little bit. We lived in, you know, some more humid climates, and, you know, she got exposed to it. My wife is same thing. She's exposed to it. And a lot of it, if you don't test for it, you never know, right? And so mold is a big factor that we could talk a while about. But
and what does that do? Why does that make it challenging for women to lose weight?
It's it burdens your cell quite a bit. So in terms of your body detoxing, mold's very hard to detox. And so a lot of molds can mimic estrogens, and they can mimic other hormones to where it increases like endocrine activity. And so for a woman who's having imbalanced hormones with high estrogen and low progesterone, like that's a, you know, that's a catalyst for their hormonal distress. And so that's a big one a lot of women see without knowing it. And then other ones are, you know, heavy metals and, you know, a lot of the materials they're putting on their skin, as you well are very well aware of, where they're applying 150 chemicals to their body every day. And those chemicals that go through your skin go right to your hormones, you know, and I think a lot of women just don't have that perspective to think about the overall toxic burden that they're adding to their system every single day. But thankfully, as a Hormosa study, you know, published several years ago, showed that if you cut it out over the course of 3 days, it can be reduced by up to 45% in just a short period of time. So like your body will actively get rid of that stuff, but you just have to stop applying it. So it's such an important thing to apply products like what you guys have, because it just helps to keep that toxic burden low. So toxins are a big one. We were talking about stressors and circadian rhythm and, you know, all that. But a lot of women have these thyroid issues because their thyroid conversion of T4 into T3 gets blocked by stress. When you have high stress, you don't convert the active hormone of T4 and T3, and then it can't get into your cell to help with metabolism and energy production and weight loss. And you start feeling it little by little, but over the course of, you know, 5-10 years, it becomes a big problem. And so a lot of women blame it on their age, but really it's like you've been in a state of deficiency for a long period of time, and you start seeing the fruit or the lack of fruit from that problem. And so that's where I always start with my clients. And then we get focused more on like strategic intermittent fasting as they kind of progress throughout our program. After we detox them from parasites and heavy metals and mold, we then focus more on like how do we get their metabolism in a more optimal state once we know that it's no longer a stressor to have them exercise at a higher intensity or have them do fasting a little bit longer term. But we don't do that up front because it's not productive at that point.
Yeah, you have to get healthy and get like balanced before your body is capable of handling that.
Yeah. I always say first get healthy, then get fit.
I love that.
Like that's kind of a good perspective to have. And I think we always do the opposite. Like January 1st comes around, we hit the gym really hard. They get injured, they get burnt out, they don't recover well. And then they're like, well, I'm just not going to do this anymore because why bother? It's not working. And the reality is like they weren't healthy enough to start doing that kind of level of intensity.
How do you help women who are just like in it, whether it's a season of life, like a where there's not really much they can do to change their circumstances and they're doing the best they can with all of the things that we've talked about?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is there anything else that people can do to kind of make the stress have less of an impact, negative impact on them, whether that's through supplementation or I don't know, just any other little things and tweaks that women can make?
Yeah. So I'll just kind of tell you what we do. So we get them on I call it a diagnostic diet, but really it's an anti-inflammatory elimination style diet to where we walk them through like what their immune triggers are. So we want to see like, do eggs trigger you, nightshades, legumes, grains, dairy, like those big categories. And then we want to figure out like what serves your body well, because if you're eating something that your immune system has identified as a foreign invader, like you don't want to be consuming that on a regular basis because that causes that stress response, oxidative stress, inflammation. And so we want to make sure they're on the right diet. And again, most people after a couple of weeks kind of get adapted to that, where it's like you're eating whole foods that God has provided to us. You're not eating man-made bioengineered foods. Like we're eating things that come from the earth that are, you know, clean beef, clean animal protein. We make sure that they don't have an egg sensitivity because that's a big one. Unfortunately, flu vaccines kind of ruin that for a lot of people because they have the egg-based proteins that can trigger immune system response. And then when you eat those after the vaccine or even into your life, if you're still having issues with that, like you can have issues mm-hmm. with eggs. And then there's also the conversation.
Is that just the flu vaccine that does
that? Probably other vaccines too, but I know the flu is a bigger one. I don't know. I'm not sure on that one, but I know there's probably other vaccines. It was pretty common there for a while. I don't know if they're still doing it as much, but it was an issue. And then there's also just the conversation of like, where are the eggs coming from? Like what quality are the eggs? Because you can have issues with other components of the egg, not just whether or not it's an egg. It's like ovalbumin protein can cause issues as well. So we want to figure that out. And once we get that kind of dialed in with their diet, they usually start to feel more energetic because they're not, you know, potentially attacking their thyroid with what they're consuming. You know, they're eating foods that are sustaining them and providing them energy. We make sure they're actually digesting it well, digestive enzymes, and addressing their stomach acid sufficiency, making sure they actually have strong stomach acid, that they're eating in a calm environment, you know, very basic stuff.
That one's hard.
It's hard. It's hard.
Hard for busy moms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But all that's... Again, free stuff. It's not that it's impossible, but it takes enough of a conviction to understand that like that's going to make a difference for you to where you'll actually implement it. Because a lot of this is just information, right? Like if I just give you information over and over again and you don't do anything with it, it's pointless. Like if you guys are watching this and you're just like, oh, that sounds cool, but don't actually apply it, like this is a waste of your time, right? Like you have to actually go out, and like do these things and like do it long enough to know that it's actually working. And if you're doing it and you start to see the fruit of your labor, you'll do more of it. I always use the example, like when women get pregnant, they may have like been drinking wine, you know, every couple nights when they're not pregnant, and then they get pregnant and they like stop at cold turkey, right? Like, because they have a conviction and belief that like that matters, right? And so they stop doing it. If you don't believe that cutting some of these foods out, or, you know, taking vitamin D and a B complex and magnesium and omega-3s is actually going to do anything for you, or having good consistent sleep, like you're just going to do what's convenient. And like, that's where you have to get at the heart of why somebody is doing what they're doing, because for most people, they have an ignorance issue. Like they're doing things they don't know that are causing them problems. And then for other people, they're doing things that they know is not good for them, but they do it anyway.
Yeah.
And like, both of those are not good. Like, yeah, we have to address both those categories. So it always starts with the with your mind and your why. And from there, it kind of starts to lead into like, how do you implement it consistently?
Yeah. It's like a disciplining yourself so that you can experience more freedom in
right.
how you feel.
Yeah.
And it's hard at first, but then once you start to feel better, it becomes something that you're more and more and more willing to do and kind of keep like fine tuning.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's other things that, yeah, I mean, I always want to make sure I kind of know, like, are you taking, yeah, like, for me, a B complex is huge. I think that most women need to be on B complex. It helps.
Is there one that you recommend?
I like Thorne's Basic B Complex. There's other ones too. I usually just look at what they own, and there's like other brands out there. But if it has non-synthetic B vitamins in it, then like I'll usually recommend that one. So I think women on average have MTHFR more often than men, which MTHFR, if I have explained it or not, it's basically a polymorphism that happens within your genes. And these guys are like wanting to learn more.
They're really interested in this MTHFR conversation.
Yeah. But it's something that affects a lot of people, right? And so it's a very simple fix, but if you have it, you don't methylate, which happens about 300 billion times a day, right? So it's a very ongoing process that affects insomnia and anxiety and ADHD and poor sleep and poor energy, poor detoxification. And there's a lot of like spin-offs that can happen from this if you don't do this methylation process well. So it's a very simple fix in the sense that you can take a methylated B complex, and it can really help a lot of women just with their cycles, with their energy, with their detox, with even weight loss sometimes, with sleeping better if they're taking it at the right time of day. But there are some caveats there. So like if you have COMT, for example, and you do have an issue with catecholamines, which are like dopamine, norepinephrine, epinephrine, If you don't clear those out of your system very well, like you can be kind of like in an anxious state often. So you do want to kind of make sure you know what your issues are. And you can do a gene test to see these, but you can do an MTHFR test, you can do a COMT test, and you can just see like where your issues are. And it's a very relatively simple fix if you kind of get that information understood. So I always like to do that with my clients.
If you're getting enough liver, do you need a B complex still?
It's probably not. I mean, this is where things get a little bit challenging because... Not challenging, but like, I think there's some nuance there. You know, I think liver is fantastic when you get like the natural raw form of these B vitamins and the way that our bodies are made to intake them. For some people, you know, they may say it's harder to get that access to that, and it's easier for them to take a B complex. And I would say,
yeah, it's definitely not easy.
Yeah, it's a little more complicated
and not always tasty.
Right,
but you can hide it.
Yeah. So I think there's some nuance there with that question. But I would say it's always best to get it through food. And if they can't, and if it's not working well enough, then it's like you might as well. You can take a B complex, and you're gonna pee out, you know, what you don't need, and because they're water soluble, so it's not like you're gonna go toxic unless you're taking significant loads of B6. But for the most part, most people don't have issues with that. So a B complex usually works pretty well.
What's your take on bioidentical hormones for women?
It's a common question. I just discussed it yesterday with my community group. But my answer is always you want to address the foundational principles first. If you're going into bioidentical hormone replacement therapy with the idea that like that's all you have to do to solve your problems, like it's not going to solve your problems long term. It's going to be a short term solution, maybe a year or two. And the next thing you know, you're going to start having higher dosage or the continuation of your old problems. So I think it's a good tool to optimize your hormones. If you have micronized progesterone and you have, you know, like an estrogen patch or something like that at a low dose, like it can be a useful tool. But I think for a lot of women, they don't fix their circadian rhythm, they don't fix their diet, they don't address any other deficiencies, they don't address their detoxification needs, and they start having these issues pop right back up. So yeah, I think so. A lot of women use bioidentical hormone replacement therapy as like their only solution to solving their problems, and I think that's where the problem comes, in my perspective, obviously using like just synthetic hormone replacement therapy is a different topic. It's not nearly as beneficial. There still can be some benefit for a postmenopausal woman that has low estrogen that just needs to get her estrogen levels up for like her bone health and preventing some cancers and things like that. But for the most part, a lot of women are using it during perimenopause states, and they're trying to use it as a band-aid to cover up a bullet wound. And it's like, you have to address the foundational issues first that I've been talking about this whole time of circadian rhythm and your detoxification and your deficiencies and all those things. And if you do that, then you can figure out what your optimal dose of the hormone could be, if you even need it. A lot of my clients that are already taking it, they end up reducing the dose or get off of it because they just find that it's not useful and it's also kind of expensive. And so for some women that want to keep taking it, they can use it as like an optimization tool, but it's not like a life-saving drug they have to take to kind of just get through their day or sleep, you know?
Okay.
So yeah, that's how I think about it.
If you were ever diagnosed with cancer, what would you do and what would you not do?
Oh man. So for me, I would not do chemo radiation. That would be my initial stance. I would do everything in my power to treat it naturally. I've talked to some really brilliant people that they don't use the C word when it comes to cancer. I'm not like of actually curing cancer, because if you say curing cancer, like you get thrown in jail potentially. And so there's like ramifications to your verbiage and how you talk about it. But I would first ensure that I'm doing kind of what I'm already doing. You know, I just said kind of continue it, but I would be very strict about my carb intake. I would be a lot more restrictive on kind of the time of fasting that I do. I would fast a bit longer periods. I'd probably do like 3-day water fast.
And can you explain why that's beneficial for cancer?
Yeah, it's so whenever you get into a long-term fast, your body starts to kind of eat up the damaged cells. Autophagy is kind of the term. It helps to kind of go after these things that would not be beneficial to your cellular health. And so not eating food, though it sounds kind of counterintuitive, can actually be very useful in terms of your physiology, because your body's not having to use that energy to digest food. It's like it can focus on doing other things. Granted, you wouldn't want to do this all the time if you're living a busy life and trying to take care of your family. Like, you have to use the energy to, like, you know, fuel what you're doing. But I would focus on that. I would do like long-term water fast. I'd be very intentional about parasite cleanses. And this is where people get kind of crazy about cancer and parasites, but they do have a role in your immune system. And I think a lot of people get, they say it's like a fringe science, but if you look at parasites and how they can disrupt TH1 cells, which are responsible for pathogens, in my mind, it's like if you are getting an immune cell to not pay attention to a pathogen, you're likely to have more issues with metastasis or like spread of cancer cells. And then it gets your cells to then focus on TH2 cells, and those are more like autoimmune focused cells. And so it kind of up ramps or regulates your autoimmune reactivity. So your body's like attacking itself. So that in my mind, killing parasites would be a foundational step, which again, I do that in my protocol already with our clients. But
what do you use for parasites?
We use a combination of different products. We kind of walk them through. It's a 4-phase process, and it's like a humic and fulvic acid-based product with some carbon technology. But essentially, we'll use things like, black walnut, hull. We'll use wormwood, you know, things like that in those products. But we kind of get them ready to go through that during the first month, so they don't go right into a parasite cleanse. Because a lot of people jump right into a detox and they start feeling the detox symptoms and they feel terrible. And so we want to make sure we kind of set them up for the right process. But
yeah, and right now the parasite and cancer connection, like you mentioned, it is kind of fringe. But even the AMA, I've seen stuff where they have acknowledged that certain parasites can contribute to certain types of cancer. Like my friend Taylor Dukes had a brain tumor.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
The type of brain tumor she had, the AMA said, was linked to a certain parasite that she had picked up in Africa.
I didn't know that about her. Yeah.
I think it's becoming more common knowledge, but maybe not among the like traditional cancer and oncology world.
What's crazy is there's a study back in 1952 that was done by the US government that showed that cancers and parasites were connected, intimately connected. And so a lot of people think that when you look at a tumor, and again, this is what I've heard, this is not necessarily my opinion, but they think that a lot of tumors are encapsulation of parasites. You know, like you start seeing like the body's protecting you from what's happening, and so it encapsulates it in a tumor. And when you start to do a biopsy and you open that up, you could theoretically increase your risk of spreading or having metastasis of that cancer. So again, don't come after me for saying that. That's just what I've read and heard, and not necessarily true, but that's what I've been told by people like John Richardson, who's his dad was a doctor back in the 70s and 60s that was actually like reversing cancer diagnosis and doing the C word. And they came after him and took his license away, and he was using apricot seeds and pancreatic enzymes to do that. And so they do that now with their company, RNC. And apricot seeds, they use, it's like controlled slow release of a low dose of cyanide, which cyanide's obviously like gotten a bad rap because it can kill you. It's high dose. But cyanide released through an apricot seed or other seeds that come from the earth can be very helpful. And I think this is where, biblically speaking, God says to eat of every, you know, seed-bearing plant and, you know, what is it? Every seed-bearing plant. And you should look this up, the actual verse. But it's, there's a verse.
It's in Genesis, I think.
Genesis 9 or 29. But anyway, like, God gives us these things through the earth, right? And so I think seeds are very helpful. Oftentimes we're eating de-seeded fruits and veggies because, like, we've been told that they're not necessary. But I think there's actually a huge component there. But
yeah, like genetically modified, like, watermelons that are made to be seedless because the seeds aren't convenient. But if you look at a watermelon that hasn't been genetically modified,
it's totally
full of black seeds and doesn't have as much of the fruit.
Yeah, bananas aren't the same thing. And so we're eating all these genetically modified foods, but I would do the apricot seeds.
Is it the cyanide or is it the B17?
So B17 is amygdalin or laetril is the two different terms that people use. And then that once it's in your cell or in your body, I think releases a small dose of cyanide. And most cells in the body have rhodanase, and I hope I'm not getting this wrong. It's been a while since I've read this, but we have rhodanase, which helps to protect us from the cyanide, but it kills cancer cells. And so if you do that with pancreatic enzymes, that will help to actually, again, allegedly degrade the tumor and help your body to deliver this into the cell or into the cancerous tumor to kind of kill it and fight it off. So that's one theory, but I would do that. I actually have B17 in a microsomal form that I take. And
is that legal in the U.S., B17? I heard it wasn't.
It's a supplement, so I mean, I get it, so hopefully it's
okay. You'll have to share your source with me.
Yeah, I'll share your source. But
I've tried the apricot seeds, and they're terrible.
Yeah, they're
taste
bitter,
disgusting.
Yeah,
I've gotten two different kinds, and the first kind I got, they were the sweet ones, and I'm like, oh, these are amazing. Like, and then I think researched a little bit more and found out that wasn't the right type.
They should be pretty bitter.
Yeah, and the bitter ones they're hard to get down.
Yeah, I think that's why they have them in pill form, or you can take them microsomally now. But yeah, anyway, so that's something I would do amongst other things, but I would definitely not go the conventional route for me personally.
Genesis 1:29, what does it say?
It says, and God said, behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit, you shall have them for food.
Okay, and look up what it says in Genesis about eating the beasts of the land or something like that.
Post the flood, it says, every moving thing that lives shall be food for you. And as I gave you the green plants, I give you everything.
Okay, so this brings us into my next question. This isn't technically like a Christian podcast. Primarily Pure is not a Christian brand, but I'm a Christian. I'm the founder.
Yeah.
You are a Christian. And so I want to get into some of this, some of these questions about the faith that we share, because you are one of the few doctors who are openly talking about health from a biblical perspective. In your opinion, what is the most biblically optimized way of eating?
I mean, I think kind of those verses that he referenced, like, is a good way to think about it. So you could say everything that moves on the earth, like in Genesis 9 or whatever it was, like, was saying that that's okay after the flood. But then you could also look at Leviticus and Levitical law, and you could see that, you know, like shellfish and pork and all those things are not clean because they are more prone to parasites and they're not a clean substance of or source of food. So I think you can get kind of religious about it. But then if you also look in like Matthew, I think they're talking about like all things are permissible, you know, like if you're going to a different culture and they eat a certain way, like it's not against the law to do that anymore, especially since Christ came. But I think for us, we have like this different framework we have to look through. Like, it's not as simple as like, is bread good for you or not? It's like, well, what kind of bread? Like, is it einkorn flour or is it hybridized wheat? Like, if it's hybridized wheat, like, I would say it's not good for you. Like, it's a foreign substance when it comes into our body. Like, our bodies aren't used to identifying that. If you're eating like sourdough and like naturally fermented flour or like einkorn flour, like that's going to serve you pretty well. Same thing with like dairy. Like, if it's conventionally raised dairy, it doesn't do very well. Like it doesn't have the digestive enzymes. It doesn't have the, it doesn't help, your body doesn't break it down nearly as well as it could unless it's like raw dairy. Like you can break it down a lot better. It's not as prone to causing like lactose issues and all that kind of stuff. So it really is like, this is where it becomes so confusing for people. And they're like, well, what do I do? I'm like, well, if you can get back to as much of the natural form of it as possible, like that's always going to be probably a much better option than what we're being fed, where
real
it's bioengineered.
Foods.
Yeah. So I would say, like, the big ones would be, yeah, like, if you're looking at pork or shellfish, like, biblically speaking, like, those would not be healthy foods, no matter how they're kind of raised. Even though I like bacon. I love bacon. It's great.
I like it, too.
It's hard. We have a local person we use, and, like, I've seen how the cow or the pigs are taken care of, and it's, like, actually is probably as good as it can be done, but they're still, like, they're the detox organ of this ground, right? And so, like, they're doing that for the ground. But I think a lot of people, we get conventionally raised bacon and conventionally raised pork and or beef, and it's just, it's hard. Like, it's a hard conversation. But biblically speaking, I would say seeds, leaves, believe it or not. I think Josh actually, I was listening to a podcast of his lately, and he has, like, this whole Biblio diet thing, and they have this whole, him and Jordan Rubin have this whole conversation about this topic on, like, what does the biblical diet look like? And I think they do a really good job of explaining, like, a biblical perspective on, like, how not to be religious about what you're consuming, but also being intentional about what you're eating. Because I think there is a difference to where it can be fruitful and helpful for you. And just like the apricot seeds, like, there are things that you can consume that can keep you healthier longer and promote longevity. So I don't know, like, I'm not sure if that's a good answer, but that's how I think
about
it. No,
that's good. Are the leaves, you think, more medicinal or more meant to be included in our everyday diets?
I think they'd probably be more medicinal. It could be more of like a ongoing prevention, prophylactic tool, I think, too. Like, I know Josh Axe was talking about how he had a friend, I think, that had some kind of cancer, and he would blend up and, like, boil, like, 12 different kinds of leaves, and he would drink it as a tea, and it reversed his condition. So I don't think he did anything else except for that. So there's some crazy cases out there, I'm sure. But I think, you know, in general, most people, they focus too much on, I think fear is probably the biggest source of people's disease, just being fearful, rather than, like, you know, wheat or dairy. But, like, those things matter too. But fear is a bigger problem, I think, for a lot of people.
When it comes to bread, I've heard people say that it's biblical to eat bread because bread is referenced so many times in the Bible. Jesus calls himself the bread of life. Mm. This is one that I struggle with. I'm not a big bread person.
Yeah.
I just feel way better when I don't have it in my diet.
Same.
Even, like, high quality breads, and I'm not against them necessarily, but I don't feel like I need them personally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people might do better without including them.
Yeah.
So what I'm thinking is that's more like descriptive of the culture. It's more of like a cultural reference with some meaning behind it rather than a prescription on what to eat.
Yeah.
What's your take?
So I have my clients cut out all grains. When they first start with me, just so I know how they do with it. You know, you don't know how you're doing until you feel better. So if you feel better, then we could bring things back in. But if you just cut out bread and nothing else, that could be a problem. You just don't know if you're going to feel better. And so I want to make sure my clients feel really well within, like, the first 3 to 4 weeks. And then once we know, we start to address the reasons that they could be sensitive to some of these things. Like, do they have actually a celiac issue to where they have a true allergy to the gluten protein itself? If they don't, then it comes down to, like, the quality of it and how often they're consuming it, and if they have good digestive enzymes, and, you know, if they have good strong stomach acid, all those different factors. So for me, it's kind of relative to the person. But I would say if you want to get to feeling better, you have to cut out American wheat. Like, you have to cut out the folic acid. You have to cut out the bromated oils. You have to cut out these things that...
The glyphosate sprayed all over the
grains. Yeah, like, we know those things are not good for you. So, like, that's an easy place to start.
Mm-hmm.
And if you start feeling better... And you want to introduce something, I would introduce, like, an einkorn flour option or some sourdough, because it's going to be naturally less glutinous than would be regular bread.
Why do you think so many Christians downplay the importance of physical health and vitality?
I mean, they don't get, I think every week they go to church, they don't get that conviction from the pulpit, you know, like, they're not getting called to that level of, life. I think we use it. I think because we have so much freedom in the gospel to, like, that we're not trying to be religious in what we're doing. So I think we kind of veer on the other side of that extreme of, like, well, I'm not going to hold any law or hold any kind of religious thing that makes me feel like I'm just trying to earn my way into heaven or something. And I think that kind of goes into our health. And so people kind of use the Ecclesiastes mentality of, like, it's all meaningless under the sun. And, like, God's going to come and rescue us and pull us off the rooftop, just like in Vietnam. And, like, we don't really need to be doing anything. And I kind of disagree with that a lot. And I think that we are called to take dominion over our family and over our community, and, like, to be pioneers and leaders in all areas of life and our finances and our health and how we raise our kids. And I think, we don't want to make it an idol at the same time. Like, we don't make our health an idol because that's not good either, but it's also not meaningless. And so I kind of view it as, and I've used this, I've told this story several times in different podcasts, but we were building a sandcastle just yesterday at Mission Beach, and my kids were like working on it for so long, and this huge tide came and washed it all out. And I was like, you know, that's like an example of life. Like, we start working on something early in the morning, we start building it up and make it look amazing and impressive. And then, like, at some point, a huge tide is going to come in and wash it all out. And, like, that's like our life. It's like we die and it's all over. But it doesn't mean like building that castle was meaningless. Like, it still had value and it still was teaching us something. And so I think the way that we live our life, it means a lot, because we are filled with the Holy Spirit if you're a Christian, and that gives you a superpower to like be more self-controlled and disciplined and slow to anger and be filled with peace, which are all things that if you don't have that, like, you're going to have a really hard time being healthy. So I think a lot of Christians that struggle with their health, probably are struggling with a lot of things in life. You know, it's not just their health. Like, it's just kind of a, you just see it more obviously than you would something else. But I think a lot of pastors, maybe they don't practice what they preach. I don't know. Maybe they feel like they don't want to assign themselves to a particular camp or like be divisive, but I feel like health is such a foundational requirement for the Christian to be. And I think we could be the healthiest people in the world.
I love that. And I think that I totally agree. I think that we were called to steward our bodies, and our bodies are a temple of the Holy Spirit. And I think it's just a cool way of like partnering with God and what His will is for our lives. And so when we choose to eat better and when we choose to take care of ourselves better, we can do what He's calling us to do. Absolutely. More effectively.
Yeah.
So it's like a partnership, I think, is how I see it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And if you look at that verse in 1 Corinthians something, and I'm sure they could look it up too, but 1 Corinthians 6:13 or something, you know, it says that, like, our bodies are not our own. Therefore glorify God in your body. It's like, it's not even my body, you know? So it's like, it's just a perspective, and you know, it's a belief issue, I think.
Back to the topic of food. You talked a little bit about raw milk earlier. Does raw milk help the immune system to function better?
So I think the right answer for me is, I don't know. Obviously, I'm not studying that all the time. I think in my experience, I understand that there's immunoglobulin benefits from consuming like raw milk versus conventional dairy. And so like, there's a difference there for sure. Also, just when you pasteurize milk and you heat it up and denature a lot of the benefits of that, you lose a lot of that beneficial fat, and fat is super antimicrobial. So I think there's a lot of benefits to consuming raw milk versus pasteurized, as I was saying before. But as far as immunoglobulins, I know that there's different companies out there that will use like colostrum as like a health supplement. Personally, if I have clients on that while they're going through at least my protocol, I take them off it just to make sure that they don't have issues with dairy. If once we get them beyond that and they want to bring it back in, we can do that. So I just don't know enough to say like yes or no on that, but that's just, you know, that's how I think about the dairy aspect of it.
I interviewed an Amish raw milk farmer last week, and I asked him when the last time he was that he had been sick, and he couldn't remember.
Wow.
I mean, they're doing a lot of things right.
Well,
the Amish.
It may not
be just the raw milk.
Yeah,
but
I think it helps, though.
I've noticed a difference in myself and my kids since we've been drinking it for the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's cool.
What are some of the unexpected health benefits of baking soda?
Baking soda is interesting. I mean, I think it's a great neutralizer of acid. So, you know, your body is very good at regulating your pH in your blood. If it didn't, like, you would die pretty quick. So I think people often think they can, if they're like, they need to be more alkaline and less acidic. And there's some truth to that, but I think there's probably a little bit more emphasis on, there's probably a little bit more fringe ideas there than there are true science. I think for people that the science has shown that it can help with like post-recovery from exercise. Like, you can help to improve sprinting distance or duration by like 5% is what one study showed. So that's not like meaningless. Like, there is some benefit there. There's a great benefit for your like oral health and like neutralizing bacteria. And it can be a great antifungal for like topical treatments and things like that.
We use it in our deodorant.
Yeah.
It
deodorant.
Really helps combat
that's,
odor.
That's great for that. I think you got to be careful of how much you're consuming. Like, you only need like a quarter of a teaspoon to like a half of a teaspoon if you're going to be drinking it.
And that'll help to alkalize the body.
Yes. But you got to be careful if you're doing it after a meal or before a meal, because that will reduce your stomach acidity, which is not a good thing. So you got to use it wisely and not just blanketly. But yeah, I think there are some benefits there.
I like taking it right before bed. I feel like it calms me.
Yeah.
And I don't do it every night, but when I do, I notice a difference.
That's, for sure.
Why should we avoid cooking red meat at high temperatures?
Well, I mean, the big one is just it oxidizes to where it produces these AGEs, or are advanced glycation end products, which basically cause like endothelial inflammation in your blood vessels, and can also cause like DNA damage. And so, if you're like a meat eater and you're eating it that's like really charred all the time and it's cooked like well done, like probably not getting nearly the benefits that you could from like all the nutrients that would come from that meat, but you're also getting some carcinogens along with that. So I think that's where people, when they look at meat as being a bad thing, they're looking at the conventional like hamburger that's on a bun with a Coke and fries, but it's also probably pretty charred and not good quality beef.
The charred parts taste so good.
It's so good. I love it too. So this is an interesting topic too, but we like, it's called pyrazine. When everything, when something is cooked and burned, it produces this compound called pyrazine, and pyrazine is highly addictive. And so that's what's in a lot of these meat products, but also in cigarettes and different things people smoke. And that's what often makes people addicted. And people always blame it on nicotine, but rarely is it nicotine. It's more about the pyrazine.
But I feel like nicotine is addictive too. Even people that I know that just do the pouches, mm-hmm. or I mean, I have experience with nicotine as well. I find it to be pretty addictive.
And so this is where it gets interesting, because like if you just look at nicotine, in my mind, it's kind of like caffeine. Like, yeah. It is addictive.
I think caffeine's actually maybe more addictive.
I think it is more addictive as well. I've done nicotine as well, like patches or pouches. The problem with the pouches are, again, it's like anything else. The additives they put in those are often very toxic, and they're also like synthetic forms of nicotine. And so they release very quickly. They cause a huge dopamine hit that you get, and that's what's addictive for people usually. Yeah. So you get used to that dopamine hit. But if you have like a slow release nicotine, or you don't do it very often, I think it's not really necessarily the nicotine as much as these other components that go to it. But that's kind of a nuanced conversation.
Yeah. What do you do for nicotine?
I have patches.
What brand?
I use Rugby. You can get them on Amazon. They're just like, they're pretty inexpensive. You can do like a 7 milligram patch or 3 milligram patch, and you can cut it into strips. And I've had clients get on it. And I always tell them, like, this is not like a recommendation officially, but like, this is just something to look into. And I've had a client recently. She was struggling through cycles for so long. We've done a lot of other things too, but she did the nicotine, and within like 3 weeks, her cycle returned. So
really? Okay, that's really interesting, because when I have taken nicotine consistently, my cycles are shorter.
So that's where I would say use it a lot, because again, it's kind of like caffeine. It's a mm-hmm. stimulant. Like if you're stimulating your adrenal glands too much, that's going to reduce your progesterone. So I think there's a balance there, and it depends on we're using a patch or what we're using.
The gum.
The gum is
not like Nicorette.
Yeah.
Lucy, which is still not amazing. I mean, I like their form of nicotine, but the ingredients are not great. Like I emailed them several times about taking certain things out, but that's what I've done.
Yeah. I would say if you really want to try, I would do like a patch that's released over the course of 24 hours.
And so it's
like,
more slower and sustained.
And it's just like pure nicotine. There's something else added to it. So you don't get, like a lot of people chew the gum, like anything. Like there's like an oral fixation we have with it. And like there's also an addictive component there.
Oh my gosh. When I chew normal gum now, I'm like giving myself away as my nicotine habit right now. But when I chew normal gum, I'll find myself like parking it in my gum because I'm so used to the nicotine gum.
That's hilarious. But there are benefits to it. But again,
and that's what drew me in, because of like the research on Alzheimer's and dementia. And I mean, personally, it's like helped with mental clarity so much. And now I don't use it often. I only use it for times that I really need to be like sharp and alert.
For sure.
But for a while I was using it daily and found that I was not getting the same benefits that I used to.
Yeah, there's nuance to that whole conversation. But I would try the patches versus the gum or anything else, because it'd be a pure form and a slower release.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Therapeutic plasma exchange is something that's being talked about as the latest and greatest longevity treatment. What are your thoughts on that?
I would say swapping like younger blood for older blood is like obviously going to have some benefits when you're exchanging plasma.
But it's still it's like they're clearing out the junk from your blood, right?
Well, that's like more like EBU, blood. Like when they do that exchange of like filtering your blood. The therapeutic plasma exchange is like they're exchanging somebody else's plasma for yours. At least that's my understanding.
Maybe I'm thinking of something else.
I think you're thinking of EBU, which is
it's different than EBU.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I'm thinking of the wrong thing, but I do know that you get like an exchange of somebody else's plasma was my thought.
It's not the thing that Brian Johnson did. I'm thinking of something else. Maybe I have the wrong name for it.
We'll talk about it. Yeah. Maybe you could clarify on that, because I'm not sure either. I can't provide any value to that.
So it's both. So it works by drawing the patient's blood, separating plasma from the blood cells using a machine, discarding the plasma, which may contain harmful antibodies, toxins, and proteins, returning the blood cells mixed with replacement fluid, usually albumin,
albumin, yeah,
or donor plasma, back into the patient's body.
So it can be both then. So yeah, I think we're both saying the same thing then. So I think as a longevity tool, for what it's worth, I guess it depends on your budget. I think...
Yeah, it's like 10 grand, right?
Yeah, it's quite expensive. So I think the benefit you would get as a longevity tool, probably not worth it when you can do sauna, you can do fasting, you can do detoxes like naturally. I would say for most people, I wouldn't be bogged down with doing that. If you're like really wanting to get an extra ounce out of it, like out of your health, I would say you could, that would be a good benefit. But doing it long term to me seems like I'd rather teach somebody how to live their life in a healthy detoxing way than like get them thinking like, oh, I'll just do my regular life and then go do TPE and like not have to change anything.
And I didn't know it was like donor plasma fluids. That creeps me out a little bit.
Yeah, that is a little creepy, especially with other things going on in people's blood these days. But yeah, I don't know. For me, I would say focus on other things before that, personally.
You are not a big fan of protein powder. Why is that?
Well, a lot of it, so a lot of people use it as a meal replacement, and like they'll wake up and again, they're not eating any food. Like they're mixing together berries and bananas and loads of kale and spinach, and they're throwing in a whey protein powder that's like probably very low quality, and they're not chewing it. So they're using the blender as their mouth, and like we never had blenders until like 50, 60 years ago. So yeah.
And when you chew, you have these enzymes in your saliva, right, that start to break down the food.
Absolutely. So mastication is a huge part of like your digestion. It's the first part of your digestion. So I think that's one component of like if you want to have improved digestion, like chew your food, obviously.
Can you like swish it around?
I don't know, actually. We could try it. But so I always tell people, if you're going to have a protein, just do it after you have a meal. Like, chew your food, get your body going, and then have, like, a little supplemental protein. I just like, you know, like a bovine, hydrolyzed bovine protein source, personally, or, like, sometimes a pea protein. Just depends on what else they're adding to it. But I just would rather get my clients, like, eat like, ground beef and sweet potato and avocado for breakfast. Like, that's what I want my clients to eat for breakfast. So.
Before we go, I want to get your take on some old school remedies.
Oh boy.
And some fringe health stuff that I've seen circulating.
Okay.
Like stuff that pharmaceutical companies don't want us to know about.
Okay. See how we go here.
And you can tell me if these are legitimate or not.
I'll do my best.
Okay. Chlorine dioxide.
Like MMS? Is that
like
the same thing? Yeah, I think that's MMS. So
what does MMS stand for?
I don't, it's they call it like a miracle minerals supplement, but okay. Like it's chlorine dioxide. So that's, to my knowledge, there's no like legitimate studies. It's basically bleach, you know, like it's chlorinated bleach. And so I think a lot of people will take it, they'll get like a GI symptom because it probably like kills a bunch of microbes, you know, which may be beneficial short term, but I think long term use of it, like I got people in my family, I'm not going to name names, that use it, and I've always been like, if you guys are doing well with it and it doesn't cause you any harm, like I'm not going to tell you to stop. I would never tell anyone online or my clients to use it because I feel like it's just too much risk, and getting the dosage right would be pretty important, and if you take too much you could definitely cause some issues. So I would not endorse that one personally.
What about borax?
Borax, no, but boron, yes. Like boron is a trace mineral that you get from food. Borax is like it contains parts of boron, but it's borax by itself is not what you would get from food. It's not a natural source. So I think if you want to take boron, that's a good idea as a supplement. It can help with your bone health and making sure your minerals stay in the right place, but I would not recommend borax necessarily.
What about iodine?
Iodine's great. If you know what your thyroid's doing, if you have you can get tested. Like you can do a blood test. You can even do some like a skin patch test, which isn't necessarily as accurate, but you can do tests to see where your iodine levels are. If you have like Hashimoto's thyroiditis, then you got to be careful with how much you take of iodine in. You want to make sure it's paired with selenium. But otherwise, iodine can be a great tool. Everybody needs iodine.
What about fenbendazole and ivermectin as off-label cancer drugs?
Fenbendazole is like more of like a veterinarian type prescription for parasite, anti-parasitic. Ivermectin's for humans, anti-parasitic.
But so I think some people take both.
They
right?
do both. Yeah. For me, they're both pharmaceutical. Like they're both have polysorbate 80 in them. Probably they have probably other ingredients mm-hmm. you're not aware of. I would say I would rather you do like a natural parasite cleanse if you're concerned about parasites. But again, it gets back to that conversation we had earlier of like how parasites could interact and affect cancer. I agree that they would be good if you were killing parasites, but I think there's probably better methods you could implement than taking those two. But I wouldn't discourage somebody necessarily from doing that.
Okay. Most fringe one for last.
Okay.
Was lead paint on walls an effective way to block EMFs that the government doesn't want us doing anymore?
Technically, yes. It's a conductor, lead is. And so it would be, theoretically, yes, it would block EMFs. I don't know. I bet you the radio waves that we had back then are not in comparison to what we have now. It would probably block like lower radio waves at some percentages, but I don't know if it would be enough to say like it's completely effective. I think for most people now, it's like if you don't want to worry about like the dusting coming off of your paint and getting like in your lungs and inhaling lead paint that way, or like your kids peeling it off and eating it, which I don't know if any of you guys did that, but I don't remember doing that.
Right?
So I don't know why that's a huge deal.
I don't
deal.
Know if that's a thing.
I know there's like some like that breaks down over time and it can kind of get into your air, but if you have like a good air filter, it's probably not a huge deal. I would say like you can use, there's like silver silver plated paints and like EMF blocking paints they sell now. I don't know how good those are, but most of the times you can just turn off your Wi-Fi. You can turn off, you know, have your phone charging by your bed. You know, use airplane mode on your phone. Like, I think that's probably a pretty good option.
Yeah.
I've read reports on these, like, stickers and stuff people put on their phones, and they don't really seem to work all that much.
No, they don't work. We did paint our bedroom at one point with, like, EMF blocking paint.
Yeah.
Because even though we were doing all the things that you mentioned, it was, like, the neighbor's Wi-Fi that was still, I mean, we were testing it with a meter, and I do feel like it helped. Like,
well, I'm sure.
We were sleeping so well in that room.
Well, even if, so a lot of people, they put their, you know, we have our headboards up against the wall that has all this electricity going through it, and if you have, like, these smart meters and all this stuff that's connected into your house, like, I think it's a huge, I think EMFs are going to be, like, the leading cause of disease and dysfunction in the human body in the future. Like, I think that's such a huge problem, especially with these 5G towers they have everywhere. And them upping the frequencies to, like, 6G and ramping it up is just going to be a whole new level of interference with their cells. And this is where it gets really conspiratorial, but maybe I shouldn't talk about this because this is, like, a little bit weird. I just read about it the other day. There's these towers they have that are, they look like 5G towers, but they're actually called Gwen towers, and apparently the military used to use them for, like, in case there's a nuclear fallout, they could communicate and get these, like, these frequencies sent. They can communicate back and forth even in a nuclear fallout. But some people are saying that the Gwen towers are actually have another use, that they potentially could, like, do mind control, right? And so mind control is, like, a huge concern for everybody because you have all these indoctrinations with cell phones and algorithms and all this stuff. But the only reason that that would work, and I asked ChatGPT, like, well, is this, like, a real thing? And I was like, no, like, that's not a real thing. It wouldn't do that. And I was like, well, what if you had nanoparticle technology in your body? Would that allow that tower to then influence how you feel and how you function? And it said yes.
Wow.
It could. So,
which is something that is on the horizon.
The COVID vaccines, they're putting it in different foods and things like that. So it's one of those things that I think is...
Oh,
maybe?
So it's here, the nanoparticle.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure.
I don't really know what that
is. It was in most of the COVID vaccines, as far as I know. It's like, imagine the, like, little microchips, like, all throughout your blood, and it's something that they kind of, I don't know how it works, but Robert Malone.
They want it in our bodies.
Yeah, and I'm just like, well, if they want that in our body, and they have these towers around that can do these certain things, like, would that be a good way to make people depressed and sick and more easily manipulated?
Yeah.
Apparently, yes. So, conspiracy.
Did I miss anything there?
I don't think so.
Okay. My husband went on this deep dive, or it's kind of off and on this deep dive of looking into, like, this fringe stuff, fringe health stuff online.
Oh, those were good. Those were good.
We haven't really implemented any of it because I'm always a little bit skeptical, but but also interested.
Yeah. Well, I think there's things that are covered up, but a lot of things are still placebo, or whenever you take a pill, it does something to you mentally, you know, and if it's something that's different, that, like, it feels special, I think it makes you feel something different. So you got to be careful with that stuff because not everything is legitimate.
What first step would you encourage anyone listening to take who wants to start feeling better, looking better? What would you say?
Set an alarm for your bedtime.
Love it.
Super sexy, but it's super basic and important. I think we just don't sleep well. Like, we don't have good rest. And then the other thing would be is it doesn't make sense. It just seems hypocritical, but fear not, like we said before, like trust, in my opinion, trust in the Lord and trust that, like, he is watching over you and he has good things planned for you. And, like, fear is the biggest harm that people are taking in every single day. And it's causing havoc in their system. So fear not.
Dr. Lake, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks.
You bring such rich insights into so many topics that I've personally been so interested in for a while. So really appreciate your time. And
yeah,
I just love how God works and how he lined up this conversation. So
perfect.
Thank you. Where can people find you and connect with you and work with you if they're interested in that?
Yeah. So you can go to my Instagram, dr.austin.lake. I think I provided you guys a link that you guys could probably click. It's like a weird link that you can actually book a call with my team. And we can walk you through a consultation to see if you would be an actual good fit to be a client. I have a ebook out there. It's holy.health/book. But otherwise, yeah, there's just, you can find me online.
Awesome. So,
yeah.
Thank you.
Of course. Appreciate it.